This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
Joining me in the studio is our head of speech, Jeremy.
Hello.
Last year's host, Francis.
Hello.
And previous host, Lizzie.
Hi.
Very special episode. How's it going, guys?
Yeah, good.
So I assume we've all seen this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to help us quite a bit then. We'll start off just by giving our very general opinions of it. I guess we'll have to spoil the plot a little bit. We can talk about there's time travel and about we can't really avoid that. The trailer's managed to not spoil it, which is like quite good considering it's such a big picture. You'd assume that the trailers would just be like a nightmare for that sort of thing. But luckily, I went in with like a completely fresh perspective. So when it got to like it started building towards time travel, I was a bit like hesitant because I didn't want them to resolve the issue that way. I thought it'd be really cheap, but I think it managed to pay off. So we'll go around the circle, starting with Jeremy.
Pretty much similar thing. I went into it. I had a feeling that time travel was going to play a part. Didn't really know how. I thought what was really good, like you mentioned about the trailers there, Jamie, was that in, I think pretty much the majority of Act 2, and certainly bar like one or two snippets of Act 3, were all excluded from the trailers. They focused pretty much solely on like what had happened at the very start of the film.
Yeah.
And overall, like, obviously we'll be coming to it later on, but like overall I thought it was generally, I know that there's probably a couple of gripes people have with it, and a couple of plot holes maybe, for which we'll probably get on to discussing, but I thought for rounding off like the first, you know, what's been dubbed the Infinity Saga, I thought it was a really, really good way of doing it. A lot of character arcs did get their completion. Some, I think, were cut in the wrong way, but
I
think some of like the main character arcs were really well fulfilled for it. I generally thought that they had a lot of expectation and hype around it, and it did live up to that, surprisingly, considering so many films in the past have fallen so far short of it. I was really impressed by it, and I really enjoyed watching it.
Agreed. Francis?
So when I went to see Infinity War, my Marvel buzz is sort of wearing off now. I still like the Marvel films, but not quite in the same way. So I went to see Infinity War, and I wasn't really sure what it was going to be. I just thought it was going to be the grand finale.
Yeah.
And when it finished, I thought, oh, you're joking, like the bad guy won. Fair enough. Okay, we're moving on. And I know my dad, when he watched it on like Christmas Day or whenever, had the same reaction. Like, what? It's like, that can't be it. And my friend who I went to see it with was like, well, yeah, obviously they're going to find a way of doing it. And I had no idea how they were going to overcome half the universe being wiped out of existence. And so, yeah, I've pretty much tried to avoid all trailers for it. The only trailer I saw was Tony Stark drifting in space in what was the wake
of Infinity
War. Yeah. And I thought, oh, this could be really interesting. Is his whole story arc going to play out just on this ship floating? I don't know. And I wanted to avoid all trailers after that, so I didn't watch any more trailers. And I went in, and obviously skipping Captain Marvel, that resolution didn't really occur to me.
Have you not seen it yet?
No, I didn't see Captain Marvel.
I still haven't either.
There isn't really any plot set up. There's the introduction of Captain Marvel, but nothing from the plot of Captain Marvel specifically carries over.
No, it's more to do with just understanding her power set how she functions in the galaxy, I suppose.
That's
as well.
A good way of putting
it.
How she functions in the galaxy is a good way of putting it. Before I lose my point, all I can say is I came out of Infinity War and I was a bit underwhelmed. And then I rewatched it around Christmas. And actually, I thought it was a really good film. And I had a similar thing with Spider-Man Homecoming where I watched that and I thought, I didn't really like that. And now, actually, it's my favourite Spider-Man film. And I think Tom Holland did a really good job. And so I came out of Avengers this time and I thought, actually, you know what? That was good. It was on par with Infinity War. And I think that's probably the best compliment I can give it for a Marvel film. It's pretty much top-notch,
really. It definitely
really
doesn't stick to any typical formula, which is like one of the bigger complaints of Marvel films in recent years.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I don't want to talk about the plot, but all I'll say is I think they did it the best way they probably could do it.
Fair enough. Lizzie?
I kind of agree in that I think it was on the same level as Infinity War in some ways. Like, I think the scope of it was handled really well, despite the fact that you get to the end of Infinity War and you kind of lose half the scope because you lose like basically half the characters going into the next one. I think it concludes some aspects really, really well. I think others it drops the ball on. But overall, it's 3 hours that feels really breezy. It's a lot of fun. It was never going to be the perfect thing everybody absolutely wanted it to be.
It did have to balance a lot of expectations, yeah, definitely.
I do think there are some things where it's a bit like, have you watched your own films to kind of carry on with your character development? But overall, it's really fun. There's lots of great character moments, despite the ones that fall apart as well. I just think it's what it is at this point. I still enjoy it. That sounds awful. I still think it is what it is at this point.
So at least, okay, it's fine. It works.
Have we got Marvel fatigue?
It definitely feels
like it's setting in, I think.
Yeah.
I went into this film with the expectation that it's probably going to be the last one which I see in cinemas.
Yeah.
Afterwards, there's a couple I'm still interested in. Maybe Spider-Man, maybe Guardians 3. We'll get into why later. But other than that, I definitely feel a sense of Marvel fatigue.
Yeah.
I actually went to a double bill of Infinity War and Endgame, like a midnight screening, because last year I saw Infinity War like 2 months after it came out, so I knew pretty much everything and every major quote. And it definitely changes the way you watch the film. It makes the ending, obviously, a lot less surprising.
Mm.
So in the timeline now, we essentially have to watch Captain Marvel before anything else.
I think only
Captain America 1.
Captain America 1. That's the only one ahead of it, yeah.
And then we do Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. And then we watch Ant-Man and the Wasp before Infinity War. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess it could work as a good teaser for what happened in Infinity War.
The biggest problem for me with these Marvel films, you have to watch all of them. You can't just sit down and watch the Iron Man trilogy.
That's what I was going to talk about. I disagree, actually. I think Infinity War and Endgame is obviously a lot better if you've seen every movie. But I think it works as its own self-contained epic, almost.
Can we know that, though, if we've seen all the other things? Because something that really struck me in Endgame and in Infinity War was I was like, I know who all the players are on this field. Yeah. I know what they can all do. I would be like, why doesn't so-and-so do this? Why don't they do that? Oh, look, so-and-so's going to do that. I know all of that because I've done it for 10 years. Mm. And it's kind of like, if you came into it not knowing that, would we feel the same about those characters are handled and everything?
I've watched Infinity War a couple of times since it came out, and they do have little moments where they reintroduce the character just for the sake of people that might be joining someone at the cinema, because they're a big Marvel fan or whatever, or they might be just going to try it out. There is a couple little moments where maybe if you've seen none of them before, or you've only seen the main Avengers films, there's still enough for you to work with going forward. I don't know if you guys agree or not.
I can think of one moment particularly, which is, I'm trying to think, cause I don't want to obviously spoil this, but it's where you have a character is sort of reintroduced to Captain America and Black Widow, and they've obviously not seen them since Civil War, and they very quickly sort of update them with the science that happened in their film, and it's sort of almost like a crash course of it. Black Widow makes a bit of a joke that she learnt this for a mission or something like that, and they do this sort of very quick recap of it to almost get people in the audience up to speed, which was, if you didn't see their own solo film, you wouldn't really understand kind of what they're talking about, why something which later, I'm trying to do this as broad as possible because we want to say this for later, but why this factor which is a huge plot point for the time travel really later on, why this is so important, but they have to it's stripped away and dumbed down, basically this is what we covered at the end of my last film. Do you understand, yes or no? And Black Widow goes, yes, but I don't know how to make it work. And Steve, being Steve, goes, well, I'll just roll with it. I'll guess this is how we're gonna play things from now on. Yeah. And there were a few instances like that, which I quite liked. I did also actually I will say later, but there's another character which sort of, he's not a character returning, but it's a character that's changed for this film. And we've known him since the first Avengers film. He has the character being remodeled very much for it. So a lot of people liked it. But that's done in one brilliant long take for one long transition scene where you see what they've kind of changed into. And I'm just being okay, you're now a badass.
Fair enough. I just thought you were talking about someone else then.
No, this is as vague as it can for the non-spoilers. But this character that we've obviously known since the first Avengers film, and they have that one long take scene, and at the end of it, they meet a character that we're sort of, you know, we're looking at it from their eyes. I'm like, okay, you've gone from being a bit of a butt of the jokes to you are now a badass. Fair enough.
Right. I thought you were talking about Hulk.
No, I realised that.
So lost.
I realised. I was like, I've got to try and like make this so that you guys can understand. Like,
that actually supports your point, Jeremy, because they've done it for two characters. I think it's killing us not talking about spoilers, so we're going to have a quick break.
Yeah.
We're 10 minutes in.
DJ! Is URN University Radio Nottingham.
And now we are in full spoilers. I think for basic structure we're going to be talking about the overall plot, like middle of the film, that sort of thing. So I do want the ending to really focus on the ending. The final battle.
Okay.
So is there anything, now that we're in full spoilers, that you guys really wanted to talk about that you couldn't in the first part? Anything that jumps out? So I know there's a lot I wanted to do about the time travel, which bothers me a bit, but obviously we couldn't get into. So the entire premise of the timelines in this film is really strange. So apparently it doesn't matter what you do in the past, it can't change your future. Mm. Okay, that's fine. But then if you remove an Infinity Stone, that can change the future.
Mm.
Or it creates a bad timeline.
And you have to put it back.
Yeah,
everything has to be put back, but you can kill people from the past and that doesn't affect your future.
I don't think they thought of the rules, I'll be honest.
No.
Like, I feel like most writers, especially if you're going to do a big world-building thing, which is not my area, but people do make big lists of, these are the rules, we will not break the rules, and they'll have them on a fridge or, you know, their wall or whatever, and just to help them kind of figure out what they were going to do. And it feels like they didn't have that for this aspect of the film, and in some ways, because we're all confused still going like, wait, so you can do this but you can't do this. And it is interesting.
So should we quickly refresh everyone's memory of what happens and why they need to time travel?
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
All right, sure. So it's been a couple of weeks at the start since Thanos has killed half the universe. Tony Stark is stranded in space, but he gets rescued by Captain Marvel. When they get back to Earth, they do a scan or something, and they find out that the same energy reading has just been matched on a distant planet, a farming planet, we later find out.
It's the energy reading that Thanos used in the snap to take half the universe away.
Yes, yeah, the same reading as that.
Reading is off on another planet now.
So when they get to that planet, they find out that he's now completely broken. He's destroyed the stones. He used them to destroy themselves. They're gone now. They're removed from the plot. They can't be used. Also, they kill him, which I thought was, like, so brilliantly shocking.
Mm.
I actually wasn't expecting that.
My dad just leaned over and he went, oh, it's a short film.
Roll credits.
Truly, that was
Fate
the
black
end game.
And done.
And then it skips ahead 5 years and we see how the world's been adjusting. I really liked that, by the way. The sort of like dystopian feeling to it. You can tell everything's functioning on normal, like people have tried to restore a sense of normalcy. Ooh,
can I jump in here?
Go ahead.
I really like that what we get in this film at the very opening is Thor basically getting his own back on the arch-villain, Thanos, by chopping his head off. And everyone says, what did you do? And he said, I aimed for the head. Which is what Thanos said he should have done in the first place to stop him.
Mm.
But what I like, and this is a sign of a true villain, they killed him, but his legacy and what he's achieved, they haven't beat.
Yeah.
So basically killing him means nothing. The point of the film is they're going to have to try and undo what he's done. I think that's really good.
And we see how that
killing
him
means nothing because there's still the issue.
We see how that like tortures Thor as well. That it was just like...
Yeah,
he did what he like assumed would work.
Yeah. Revenge doesn't do anything. Because that's such a great message.
Yeah, because for Thor, it's always been like either hit them with a hammer or like with the axe in Stormbreaker's case, and like that'll solve the problem. But this case, he does it, and it's like I can't now fix it. And he doesn't. He almost you see later on, like he becomes so. Well, I don't know now what to do. I've been beaten.
But this is essentially a hero, a demigod or god. What is
he's
he?
He's a god.
Yeah. Murdering someone, like murdering what ends up being a helpless man who's half dead anyway. He's destroyed the stones, he's worthless, he's living
farmer.
In his retirement home, the Avatar ghetto. Thor murders him, and then Thor has to live with that, and he becomes an obese drunk.
Do you want to skip ahead and talk about Fat Thor? We can talk about
I think that's a talking point.
Yeah, so it's definitely... on the one hand, I do like how it represents like depression.
So just to be clear, for people who are listening, this is in the 5-year time
after
jump.
So we have
Thor, Thanos off, head off.
And now
and
we're
then
5 years,
now we're 5 years
into
the future.
Make sure you're keeping up, taking notes.
Yeah.
Fat Thor, go.
To be fair, though, just to pause for a minute, it's not confusing at all before it gets to the time travel. It's very straightforward. No, I do like that.
That's fine.
Yeah. But yeah, they chose to physically represent Thor, which I understand. They physically represented his depression, but since we can assume it's going to be reversed in the future, like Lizzie was saying before the show, it's mainly played for laughs. And there has been concern that that's sending the wrong message.
There's been a lot of different feelings that have come out about it. I know people have said, oh, it's really great to see a hero with a different body image, but that body image is consistently shamed for the entire film. It's that kind of thing of that it's only funny that he's fat because he's normally not, and we go, oh, that won't stick, it's Thor, and then we can laugh at it for a good 3 hours, 2 hours, or whatever it is.
Also with the hero thing, as soon as he does his Thor transformation, he becomes normal Chris Hemsworth almost. I don't think he's as big. I think he is,
but it's not framed that way. He's shot to be more heroic once he has.
Yeah, which I thought was a bit, all right, if you're going with that line, I wasn't sure with that.
I had a minute where I actually was like, has he lost all the weight in that moment? And I've seen it twice and he doesn't lose the weight. I did check for it.
Even at the end?
I think even at the end,
he's still got it. I kept on thinking whenever he does the Thor transformation, he changes.
But
I think it's just maybe the way
the black clothing works when he's more in Thor mode, whereas previously, there's the Big Lebowski reference. And
I'm not going to lie, I did laugh when they called him Big Lebowski.
Oh, I laughed. Yeah. I was the only person that laughed in the cinema at that, though. I felt really bad.
Also, the fact that Jeff Bridges also been in Iron Man 1, that was a very nice callback. So Big Lebowski exists in this universe and it happens to look exactly like Obadiah Stane.
That's true.
Such is the way of life, I guess. Yeah. But what I was complaining about, time travel. So they realise they have to go back and take the stones out of their own timelines to basically undo the snap. Which I was worried about going in, like I said earlier, but I think within the context of the film, within the context of the two movies as a big epic, I think works quite naturally.
Yeah. Mm. So there are six Infinity Stones that are all at different time zones before Thanos got his hands on all of them to destroy the universe. And they have to go back in time to find where the stones were before Thanos got them, so he never gets them.
Mm.
And they can use them to bring everyone back.
Yeah.
Well, for the sake of convenience and character interaction, they narrow it down to three different times
times as well.
That was a great moment.
It's almost like this is a Hollywood blockbuster movie.
That was a great minute though, actually, when they were trying to plan it, and then it was Black Widow Natasha, she just goes, wait, if you pick the right year, three of them are in New York, and they're and I thought that was really funny. It was kind of making fun of the fact that they've all spent all that time in New York. It's just been New York. I actually did find that really
funny. Although I don't know how they were sure that the Time Stone would be there, although I did find it a bit funny how the Ancient One was just standing on top of the building taking pot shots.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Oh, I tell you what, actually, that brings me to, I think that might have actually been my favourite scene, because
with Hulk and the Ancient
because there
one.
Was such an interesting part of that where she said Stephen Strange gave Thanos the stone. Why would he do that?
It's the confusion in it.
And that to me is, you're like, oh, he's onto something. Even though Stephen Strange vanished into thin air 5 years ago, he's still doing something. He's still got something up his sleeve.
She says really something very interesting as well, because this was 5 years before the events of Doctor Strange. She says to Hulk, you're about 5 years too early. I love that line, because it has been established that she can see as far as up to her death in Doctor Strange. So she knows she can trust him. I do think that was brilliant.
I did like that, that you're 5 years too early. I was like,
it's like he's over there performing some surgery in that hospital and points in a
very he's only a few blocks away and there's a massive battle.
I wondered that. I didn't think
he's performing surgery. Yeah. That's very inconvenient.
Very dedicated.
He was the world's greatest surgeon.
Steady hands.
Yeah.
What was your guys' favourite moment in the past then? There's a few to pick from. A few, admittedly, a bit nostalgia bait, but it did serve the story.
I'm going to go with the Captain America and the elevator scene because it's the core. It's a really good. I was saying to Lizzie, like it's a really good like double whammy. There's the callback, obviously, to Captain America: The Winter Soldier, in that he gets in. Something you see instead of like in the past where it's like Cap's in the Winter Soldier, Cap's on edge, all the what we turn out to be Hydra soldiers like around him, and he doesn't really know that. And he walks in, suddenly all the Hydra soldiers are going, okay, what's going on here? And then like he pays it off with the line at the end where he's speaking to, where he basically like takes staff and just says Hail Hydra to them, walks off with such a grin on his face.
It's brilliant.
It's both like the reversal, because I kept on thinking they're going to somehow repeat the elevator
fight. Yeah, I think that's what everyone was expecting.
Yeah, and then he does that, and I was initially thinking there's the Secret Wars comic book. I was like, oh, that's the panel where he turned around, said Hail Hydra. There was a massive uproar.
He was
on the
basically
internet.
Replaced by an. I looked this up. It was replaced by like an evil version of himself that was loyal to Hydra. Mm. Comics are weird. I think they
because comics
they captured that the best.
Yeah.
In this movie,
that was that gave me a lot of laughs. That scene actually, just when he walks out.
To go with that, I think Ant-Man being along for the ride.
Oh, so, I love that man in this movie.
He said, are you joking? They even look like bad guys.
Yeah.
And sort of pointing out the beauty of hindsight.
Yeah. Well, Ant-Man is really good in this movie. Like I never expected Paul Rudd to play such like a big role in the big crossover, but he was so brilliant in this.
Yeah.
They obviously tied in his two movies with the shrinking, although once again time travel's a little bit weird. So they shrink into I forgot what it's called.
It's like a quantum realm.
The quantum realm, then they go through time tunnels. Now, I'm not saying that's impossible because, you know, we've never tried it.
I love is that of all of it, Tony Stark figures out time travel after drying the dishes. Like, you just see him done the dishes. Oh, I'm going to crack the time travel now. Oh, I've done it.
He would, though, wouldn't he? You kind of get to the point where you believe
it. Was
it
was such a Stark moment.
That. Yeah.
So good about his character. Tony Stark, he's a bit like. You know, has anyone ever watched Doctor Who with David Tennant?
Yeah.
He'd always like moan, but then he'd do the right thing because he knew that's what he had to do. Like when it came to his time to regenerate into Matt Smith, he really didn't want to go, and he really had a go at the person that was responsible for his death. Yeah. But he did the right thing in the end, and that's the same with Tony Stark. He can't help but do the right thing. He's a true hero, and Iron Man 3 proves he's a true hero without his suit. And if Marvel Cinematic Universe shows nothing else, it's that all the characters in this and the actors bring their absolute A game, and they really do develop.
Mm.
Like they develop into, if you see where they've come from, they come quite a long way. It's quite satisfying.
I do think Tony Stark as a character has the strongest development, and I want to talk about that a bit more in the next bit because we're not doing that stuff yet.
There's something else I want to talk about more in the ending as well, but I'll mention it here to support what you said. Is that I think this movie was mainly Iron Man and Captain America's. I think it was their send-off.
It definitely was. I think as well, when you were saying about the favourite bits in the past, that was almost kind of some of my favourite bits, was that they were like, you can't really interact with your previous selves, and Captain America straight up has a fight with himself.
Yeah.
And Tony Stark's like, just give him a heart attack, it's fine. Just give the old version of me a heart attack briefly, and we'll just deal with that. Like, I just love that they just completely went against that. I thought that was brilliant.
There was a funny moment which was like, I thought was sort of a bit of a continuity break without actually being so, which was the way past version of Thor handled the heart attack like he was the present version of Thor. Like, he played it up very comedically, which is something he would do since Ragnarok.
I see. So he's become the more sort of funnier.
Funny guy.
Yeah.
Wait, which bit are we talking about?
When he shocks Tony after he has the heart attack. That whole thing was like, that's something 2017 Thor would do,
but not necessarily. Yeah, and he says, "Look, I didn't even know if it would work." Yeah, whereas that doesn't really work with 2012
I think that's
Avengers.
Just for the benefit of the audience, to
that,
be fair.
That comes into play quite a lot, actually.
Yeah,
benefiting the audience versus continuity.
Oh, so much.
Is there anything else you can think of?
No, not off the top of head. To be honest, but
put you on the spot a bit there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest, no, I can't think of anything.
I guess that's
head,
a good leading to talking about past Thanos and how he's brought back into the movie as the main villain. At first, I was a bit disappointed because I wouldn't have minded if the whole film was just them traveling around in time. I changed my tune by that point completely.
I kind of felt frustrated with it just because I was like, we've done a whole movie with this guy. Yeah. I've now seen him get his head off. I'm just tired of him.
It irritated me as well because we just want to see them wrap up and save the world, not have more problems.
Yeah, which is fine because it's raising the stakes, but it was low-key a bit frustrating.
They needed the Act 3 payoff, though.
We'll talk a bit more about the Act 3 payoff because that's what changed my tune again into being very forgiving of them bringing back past Thanos just for the sake of that build-up.
I almost felt it was like they were introducing a completely different character, because his whole introduction is like it's after whatever planet he's latest like attack on, and he walks on, you don't actually see him. The first thing you see is that weird double sword
first
thing
time
he's
we've
got.
Ever seen
yeah.
that
yeah of, and like you just last. See you, it's it? It's not even yeah. him that's oh. like the first shot okay. like it's that, and you see him wiping it whilst his voice is talking over it. And I was thinking, like, I think afterwards I was more thinking, I was like, this is almost like they're introducing a completely different character. Like, we know from Infinity War the sort of Thanos is sort of, you know, almost like a philosopher wandering around that's occasionally punching people to get his way. But this is kind of very much a bloodthirsty Thanos that's wandering up. And I think afterwards I was thinking, oh, was that them saying this is a different character? But it did feel a bit at the time.
Like I said before the show, I think the justification for this is that in the past he was a lot angrier because he just lost the Mind Stone when Loki took the scepter to Earth and obviously didn't bring it back. So I think 2014 Thanos is supposed to be like a lot angrier, while, like you said, Jeremy, present Thanos is like a prophet almost. He's a lot calmer. This is just the end game for him. That was his end game of just collecting the stones and finishing the job. But I think it did eventually pay off, but I do agree. Although I'm not sure how the logic of how he got the army to the future, I'm a bit confused about that. But once again, that's a time travel issue.
And this is what I'm talking about, the sword. This is more continuity, probably for the audience and for the sake of
his design as well. His design is like, because in Guardians of the Galaxy, when we first see Josh Brolin as Thanos, he looks different than he does now. When we see him again from 2014, but you just kind of have to like ignore that, I guess.
I'm kind of like,
well, you have to ignore the roadie changing. So
I'm like, maybe the army's meant to come through because Nebula opens. A past version of Nebula who's more bloodthirsty than the current version of Nebula. She opens the portal to bring them through. So I'm like, maybe that's how the army gets in.
At least with Nebula, it does make sense because she went through the whole arc in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So, kind of a really basic question, but what was your favourite moment of the film? What stands out to you?
I think I liked Tony Stark talking to Howard Stark. I think that was one of my favourites.
Oh, that was brilliant.
I actually really enjoyed that. I thought that was really great to kind of, especially because Tony's kind of held on to that bitterness for such a long time.
We saw Jarvis as well, which is a character from Agent Carter. That's the first one to make the jump from
TV
to film.
That was a nice little shout,
to film, and probably the last, I guess.
My
hope is that they take one of the Netflix characters and give, you know, like Daredevil, for example, and give them like an actual movie run. I think it's like more than past time for it.
Yeah, they've slowly been closing those down. Is the only worry with that
for the Disney Plus streaming service?
I think Disney Plus streaming—that's really where the fatigue is going to set in, because they've been like, the series are going to be so connected to the films. And I'm not going to lie—I haven't watched any of the Marvel series. I haven't been able to stick with any of them, not even Daredevil. And I've been fine because I could still watch the films. But I think if I have to watch the TV series to understand the films, people are just going to drop off. Because also, you've got to pay for Disney Plus, so it's another. Like another online streaming service.
It's so true. Yeah. I mean, myself and Jeremy, we didn't even manage to see Captain Marvel or Ant-Man and the Wasp. And if you start including series-long TV characters into that, you're going to have a real problem. I mean, don't get me wrong, you'll build up an incredible universe as long as you play by the rules. But, I mean, you will just get people just losing interest.
Yeah. one scene I was going to say, which I don't know what I feel about, is probably the Vormir scene for Hawkeye and Black Widow, because that was one where
we didn't talk about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was purposely done. But like,
I was like, are we talking about that yet, or are we not talking?
We
about
should,
that
yeah,
yet?
We should talk about.
We can talk about it now. Okay.
Like, I liked how they kind of played up like the pair of them are meant to be equals.
Yeah.
But probably this is my own folly for watching the trailers. I knew that there was at least like three in my mind. I was like, there's still like a couple of shots of Hawkeye still to come. Plus, he's. I was trying to think what they were trying to like imply with the arc, like Hawkeye wants his family back. Mm. But I was thinking at the same time, you could say, well, Hawkeye dies to get his family back, and
yeah, like it a was, sacrifice.
Point. Yeah, like it was one where they go, they're going to Vormir, and I think for fairly early on, I was thinking, right, one of them isn't making it back. I just don't know which one it's going to be, but that was one scene where I was like, I don't know how that played out. So I'm really on the fence about that one.
This really annoyed me, this scene.
I can't tell you how much I hate this scene.
They get to this planet. Yeah. Basically, there's an Infinity Stone called a Soul Stone, and in order to get the Soul Stone, you have to sacrifice yourself or sacrifice someone to get it, so only a life will pay for it. Mm. And Gamora, who's...
She should have known about it.
Sends him there. Like, I'll be honest, why didn't Gamora go and jump off that?
No, Nebula.
Nebula, sorry. Yeah. Nebula. Why didn't Nebula go and jump off?
Well, Nebula should have known about Gamora.
Why didn't she warn them?
Like, she could have
worked it out. She actually works it out at the end of Infinity War. She goes, he went to Vormir with Gamora, and
came
only
back
he came back.
She also says that, like, that's where my sister died, and they're like, oh, okay, because they're making notes about all the different places.
They
and
really
then,
should have talked you through.
Yeah, and then they kind they of, like, they sort of pluck it when they get there. They're like, oh, that's how it happened. That's not a coincidence. And it's like, you could have thought of that earlier.
Yeah, no, that wound me up, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? That's really irritated me.
Like, what?
So bad.
They're sort of like... glance over the Power Stone as well. They just had the little comedic moment with Peter
really
Quill.
Funny,
it was funny.
I didn't mind that, just because I think when Come and Get Your Love comes on, I don't know about anybody else, but I was proper like bopping in the cinema. And then I loved being called out for being that ridiculous myself in a way. And it was like, yeah, so he's an idiot. It was like, yeah. And I found that really funny, but that was just me. But they did gloss over it.
It does work as like fan service, and also it was just to give some like War Machine something to do.
Yeah,
it basically doesn't do anything for the entire film.
But to go back to the Soul Stone, because I hate this scene, like I really do. I know, like Jeremy, you said that you were trying to work out who it was going to be, but for me, early on, I was like, oh, it's going to be Black Widow, because just so many women die in comic books to further male pain, and I was like, right.
Blimey.
They do, though, I'm sorry. But no, it's genuinely, it's a real thing called fridging that happens in comic books that was to do with somebody's, I can't remember who, but somebody's girlfriend being put in a fridge to further their
Hal
pain.
Hal Jordan's, I think.
Hal Jordan's, yeah. And it's a whole thing that happens in comic books.
I know
I was
about
just
this
like,
of this.
I was just like, okay, here we go. So this kind of like inevitability settled in, and I really wanted it to be Hawkeye at this point because I just don't really like him. But
that's so true, actually. Yeah. It's Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's just a whole different problem on its
own. Like in things like The Dark Knight as well has that where they kill off Rachel. And I remember actually in Iron Man 3, I thought, oh, they're going to kill Pepper. Okay, we're going to have this again. And I was so impressed with Iron Man 3 for not doing that. Mm. So when I got to this, I was like, okay, here we go. So I just kind of prepared myself for a fridging, and that kind of was really disappointing because I was hoping we were past that point.
I think there's more that Black Widow could have done as well, because they're doing a solo movie, so is that just going to
be...
It'll
be
in the past, surely.
It really frustrated me as well, because she spends the whole film saying that this is her family, and then when she dies, the first thing Tony says is like, does she have any family? And it's like, it's meant to be you, and you all should have organised a funeral for her, and you didn't.
But someone
like,
did say that, didn't they? I swear,
Steve Banner says it's us.
It's like they set that line up for Steve
to say us.
It's us.
Which is kind of fine, but there is no payoff to her dying, really, in a way, except getting the stone.
I really didn't think she was dead. And that's not one of those, like,
really, how come?
Red Wedding sort of, no, surely not. This was a, she won't be dead. Because it just seems so stupid. Why wouldn't Nebula say, oh, if you go, one of you will have to die?
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, does it have to be a human sacrifice? Could they have just taken
Could Hawkeye have thrown his bow in?
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what I mean?
That's the thing, yeah.
Just like taking a cow and like just sacrifice the cow.
I suppose it's meant to be that
much. Or they could have kidnapped a human, like kidnapped a nasty person. I mean,
think,
Hawkeye was killing mafia bosses.
For it to be a sacrifice...
A Yakuza.
That's a whole other thing. But I think it's meant to be the thing you love the most. Or something like that. Something that you really, truly care about. So you can't just be like, I've got a cow, I've got no emotional attachment to the cow.
Well, you could just like hang out with a cow for a bit. <isn't there?
laughs> Yakuza bosses love themselves. Get them to throw themselves in.
I don't think they'd want to. Like, how would you convince
them
to do
that? All I'm saying
is
I think there would be a
some people have said that because they were so willing to die for each other, it should have cancelled it out. Like it, they, yeah, I kind of disagree with that because it's still a sacrifice either way. But people do say that because they were both so willing to do it to the point that they got to the edge and were still going, yeah, that they should have kind of cancelled
like,
it out.
It still needs a soul, though. Like that's why Gamora was in the Soul Stone in Infinity War.
The biggest problem is as well that since the MCU was set up, we've had Breaking Bad and we've had Game of Thrones, and both of those have sort of ruined pop culture. Where now we like need deaths, we need our heroes to die, and I think. It's one of those things where if it turned out Black Widow wasn't dead, it'd be Game of Thrones syndrome. We'd be like, oh, I'm so angry she's not dead. Like,
what a cheap unrealistic.
And we sort of miss what was good about stories to begin with. Like, I don't know.
On campus.
And online.
Online.
This
is
URN.
So, where we left off, they have just collected all of the Infinity Stones. They bring it back to the future. They give it to Professor Hulk. Well, they debate about it for a bit. They give it to Professor Hulk, which I don't know if we've had the chance to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Mike Ruffalo did like a really great performance. That's my main point about Professor Hulk. So, he does it, and then Hawkeye gets a phone call from his family. That's our confirmation that the snap is worked. Mm-hmm. Now it's basically just a waiting game. So we know something has to happen with the other heroes eventually. But Thanos has also been brought to the future by the evil version of Nebula.
Yeah. So just, I think just to clarify that one, when they were doing all the time travel stuff and Nebula and Rhodey go on their mission to get the Power Stone, Nebula's kind of internal memory is essentially hijacked because of, I don't know, the galaxy version of the cloud, basically, where she's just attached to it. And so they take out the good Nebula and replace her with, like, 9 years ago...
Yeah, something like that.
...Nebula, who was very still much bloodthirsty and trying to prove herself to Thanos. So that then threatens the team to catch them up there.
And basically, Thanos blows up the Avengers HQ, which was established in Age of Ultron, I believe.
Yeah, at the end of that.
So that's all blown up. It looks like an absolute war zone. I think Hawkeye, Ant-Man, Hulk and Rhodey are all trapped underground. So for now, they're taken out of the picture. And we're left with Thanos versus the original three Avengers, which I think is perfect. And it leads into this giant battle scene. After they fight him for a bit, we have that moment with Captain America and the hammer. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about a few individual moments in a second. And eventually, there's this really beautiful shot of Captain America standing off against Thanos' army. And then that's when everyone arrives. So now let's talk about that last battle scene.
When the Avengers
assemble. So what did we think? Like when that first happened, the whole on your left callback, I think, was brilliant. Especially since that's the first movie directed by Anthony and Joe.
Yeah.
I think like the whole callback and the nostalgia trip of it was like a fantastic pairing with all the new Avengers coming out. Mm. And like, yeah, I was just sort of like stunned in the cinema. What did you guys think?
I think my initial thing was good. As they're all coming out of the various different portals, they're all lining up. I think initially I was like, I'm going to have to somehow keep track of, you know, who's going to be doing what in a minute, and this is going to really hurt my brain.
Yeah.
But it was really good. I mean, the double payoff for Cap, that whole fight bit, I think, up until like where he says Avengers Assemble, is basically like it's a Cap payoff moment from him picking up the hammer. You have the shot, like you said, Jamie, of like him standing alone against Thanos, which is...
I need for a wallpaper, by the way.
Yeah, like that. I thought that was generally one where they, you know, like when you see like the draft concept arts they do, and it's sort of, you know, it's slightly wispy and sketchy. I thought that was one they'd honestly gone like, you know what, we're just going to put that straight in the movie. That was brilliant for me, and it was so much like he's got by then. I mean, we are in sports actually. His shield's been smashed. He's not, it's not what you associate with Cap anymore. But like, you know, the shield's broken and he still uses a bit, but like this is now just Steve Rogers, one man standing up against that. And then you then get, you know, when it's looking like, okay, it's Steve versus an army, good luck. I mean, we know you're good, but like this is going to be a big ask. And then everyone comes through. That was one moment where I was very much like the 8-year-old boy inside me was like, yes.
I thought it was really fantastic because when you start to get the like on your left thing, you start being like, wait, who is that? Is that Sam? And then you kind of be like, wait, Sam's not here. And then you're like, yes, he is. And then like, especially the way the Doctor Strange magic works with the portals, where it starts off as like a very small gold circle that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Just watching that start to happen and then having like T'Challa step out of it, I was like, yeah.
which is like an, obviously at the time they didn't know how successful Black Panther was going to be, but that was a nice nod to him.
That was a nice nod
either way.
And is this the right time now, Lizzie, to talk about girl power? Ziggy Zigga Zigga.
We can. a very interesting moment which immediately jumps out in the cinema. I think it's a reference to, like, it's called like the Air Force, the or something A-Force, in the comics, where all the female Avengers, which are there, all line up to defend Captain Marvel as she's taking the gauntlet to the time machine to be sent back.
Literally running the gauntlet.
Hey, nice. Oh yeah, that scene is fantastic though, just as a bit of like preamble to what we're going to talk about. It starts off with Hawkeye after he's emerged from underground. He has to run. He gives it to Black Panther, who calls him by his name, which is a good reference to Civil War. Who then gives it to Spider-Man, who flies in. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, because like Captain America throws the hammer, and he like attaches onto it. All makes sense in context.
Yeah, it does.
And then he gets saved by Valkyrie, and then Captain Marvel takes it from there.
Yeah, Captain Marvel also comes in quite a... It's genuinely a really cool way, because there's all the shooting from the ship that then suddenly all the guns kind of turn upwards and they're like, wait, what's going on? And they're like, something's entered the atmosphere, and then she completely destroys like a ship in like 2 minutes. And it's
kind of a double...
It's like flies through
it's
it.
It's so good.
It's kind of a double-edged sword, because it makes her look extremely powerful to the point where she wouldn't need help.
This is where the problem is. They just have that really cool thing, and then suddenly it's like she goes to pick up the gauntlet from Peter, who looks terrified, and it's brilliant. But she goes to pick that up, and then he says, like, I don't know how you're going to get through all of that. And it's like, well, she just got through a spaceship, so all right. And then it's like, I think Okoye comes in or something and says, like, oh, she won't have to do it alone. And then suddenly there's all these female characters together in one shot, and it's a bit of a girl power moment. And
including the strongest one, Mantis. Who's going to who's going to solo the entire army?
Yeah, she's just going to send them all to sleep or something.
I did see a really cool suggestion, which is have Nebula be the one who gets the gauntlet off of Spider-Man, and then he asks her, how are you going to get through all this? And that's when everyone comes to help her.
Yeah.
Because he just feels a bit disingenuous.
It's really strange, because A, you just think Captain Marvel does not need help about this. B, you kind of think this is actually really not inconvenient, but like it's impractical in a way to have that many people in one particular space on such a large battlefield, which is again why it feels even more like pandering in a way. But it also just kind of feels like kind of sad that you can fit all the women in one shot. That's a bit depressing, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
They make up about, I think, a third now of all the main characters, which is, like, better than some places.
That is still, to be fair, an achievement.
It's still an achievement.
And I really hope that, like, young girls that are really interested in comic book films get something from it where, you know, women in film have come a long way, and women in superhero films have definitely come a long way.
Captain Marvel was really good for that. Like, the amount of little, like, things I saw of little girls going to see Captain Marvel was amazing.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. And so I hope people do get something from that, and they do punch the air. It just didn't have to be done in such a cheesy way.
It's
such a serious film.
It's
what
cheesy,
was that?
But it was also like, here's your one shot in a 3-hour film.
I didn't like that for that bit. And it now, felt so much like, here we go, we're going to now pander to.
Yeah. Did you want representation? It is this one shot in a 3-hour film.
Yeah,
but and it was kind of like, but that's not enough.
And that's what made it cheesy as well.
Yeah.
The fact that they couldn't just all.
They couldn't just
be
all
there the
participate,
whole time.
They all had to do one thing kind of together.
But what was sort of better, and I say this to you, Lizzie, was kind of like where you had almost like them working with their male counterpart. Like you had Iron Man and Pepper's Rescue.
Yeah, that was
their
really
back to back bit when they're fighting. You've got, you know, Ant-Man, the Wasp, they're trying to navigate the battlefield as best they can to get to the van. You've got bits where you've got, you know, the two partners working completely in sync. That's where it's a really
that
good,
works,
like,
that's where it works.
That's
best.
Where it's better. When you've then got...
Equality.
You know, yeah, I mean, if you had, for example, like, Okoye and Black Panther tag-teaming whilst they're fighting people, that would have been a really
good bit. I'm
surprised
they didn't do that, actually.
Yeah, but it's just the whole bit where it's like, we're going to go out the way.
Yeah. I think, really, it's very interesting, because I think, A, this is kind of, as we were saying before, it's Tony and Steve's movie. They have much take up the majority of the runtime. So I think they were like, oh gosh, that neither of them are women. We'll have to give them something. We'll give them a shot. And it's kind of interesting as well, because they sort of said in the run-up to the film, oh, Captain Marvel's going to be really integral to this. She actually has 15 minutes of screen time, and that's it, because she's too overpowered that they keep making her leave and go and save the rest of the galaxy, I guess.
Yeah, literally, in a long film, I'm going to be off for a bit.
Yeah, she just says, you won't see me for a long time. And I remember sitting there like, oh, she's not going to be in this film, is she?
Do you know who I feel bad for? Drax.
Drax.
He never got his revenge. He never got.
Yeah.
They did two movies building up to him getting revenge on Thanos.
Yeah.
I think he could have. There's a really funny moment where he jumps on the back of one of the children of Thanos and is like stabbing.
That's
it.
Well,
why didn't you just do that with Thanos? They could have changed, like. Just use a different
point,
CGI
you know?
Model.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Because that's his whole motivation early on, isn't it? He just wants that revenge.
Yeah.
But then again, that's probably the problem of having so many characters that all want the same thing. They probably can't all have it.
And
but
that's
like
why
saying,
Thor had to be pushed aside a little bit. Because they set up an arc in Ragnarok and in Infinity War that wasn't really paid off in Endgame. Which leads me to want to really talk about why I'm super interested in Guardians 3.
Yeah.
Part of it is James Gunn coming back, so now he's going to do a great job with it. And the other part of it is Thor joining the cast, at least for
it
one
has
movie.
Guardians.
Are you not as happy about
that?
As Guardians, yeah, nice. Yeah.
I personally don't like it because Guardians of the Galaxy is my favourite two films in the whole thing. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is my favourite Marvel film, and I love that kind of character group. I loved how Guardians of the Galaxy 2 ended. I did feel quite cheated about how they rushed Peter and Gamora's romance for Infinity War, especially given Guardians of the Galaxy 2 ends in this kind of like, we have this unspoken thing but we're not going to deal with it yet. And then I just kind of think Thor will really just raise the immaturity level of Peter that we spent two movies trying to get away from. So I do feel kind of frustrated about that.
And they reset his relationship with Gamora.
Yeah.
I felt really bad for him. That was supposed to be a funny moment, but actually
I feel bad for Gamora, though, as well, because she's going to have to deal with him now, having all of that, and she's going to have no idea about it. That could be a real...
She's going to be so confused.
Yeah.
It's like, well, for Peter, it's like 4 years in the future, but, I mean, for the whole world, it's like 9 years in the future.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's going to be a lot of complications with that. How do we think this is going to affect the films going forward?
Can I say one first?
Go ahead.
Spider-Man, is he still in high school? I don't get it.
I think
he is.
Well, are they now saying, right, for those of you that were disappeared 5 years ago,
you have to keep on
just
where you were.
Just go back to school where you were. For those of you that have graduated, that's fine.
See, it looks like, coincidentally,
all of his class is fine.
Yeah, Ned's there.
MJ.
Given that we have 5 minutes left, should we talk about the big thing we haven't talked about yet?
The elephant in the room.
The elephant in the room of the big final snap.
Oh, of course, yeah. poor Professor Hulk didn't get his moment. Yeah, I'm sorry. Anyway, that's the end of the show. But yeah, of course, at the end, Iron Man does the ultimate sacrifice, which I think I've always felt that ever since he was in that explosion that put shrapnel in his chest, it's like he's been on borrowed time.
He has been on borrowed
time. So it's sort of like a really tragic story to it. How were you guys in the cinema when that happened?
Pleased to just complete his character arc. Tony Stark, for me, Steve Rogers was born a hero.
Yeah.
Tony Stark became one, and for me that's always been the more interesting journey.
That's been the conflict between the two in a lot of ways.
I really liked that. I've been a Tony Stark person the whole time with these things. I know some people either favour Iron Man or Captain America. I've always been an Iron Man person, and it made me cry, honestly, because I didn't want it to be him to die, but I also knew that it made sense. And I thought it was great to see him really struggle with that. And especially earlier on, you could see that he was kind of thinking, I really could die in this. And when he was thinking about all the time travel stuff, he spoke to Pepper and said, you know, I can put a pin in this. Like, we don't have to do it. And she was like, well, will you be able to rest, though? And it's what you were saying about he always has to do the right thing.
Yeah. Well, he always will do the right thing. He doesn't have to.
No,
will.
But he chooses to in his own roundabout way. And I thought that was really brilliant.
Yeah, I like grew up with these films, and it all started with Iron Man. I watched it when I was like 10 years old, which I think is like around the perfect age.
Yeah, I would have been about
to grow up for that film and to grow up with the subsequent films. How do you feel about it, Jeremy?
The guy I went to see it with went afterwards. I remember in the car when we were driving back, he was generally like, the only thing he kept saying, I can't believe he's dead. He was honestly like sort of in a state of shock. And I kept on thinking, you know, for both Steve and Cap, there's two options for them both. Like, one will die and the other will have a good life.
Like a retirement.
Yeah, and I kept on thinking, well, we've seen Tony like touch on that retirement earlier in the film. So I was like, is it going to be him? The moment of it, like, they set it up earlier when Banner says, you guys can't handle this, like, it will kill you, like, mm-hmm. if you do the snap. And the moment you see, you know, Thanos does his I am inevitable clink, nothing happens, and like Tony puts them on, I think at that point I was like, yeah.
Oh, the callback. Yeah.
I've got to say though, as well, you mentioned the borrowed time. Stephen Strange gave Thanos the time stone after Tony had been stabbed.
Yeah.
From then,
yeah.
he was on borrowed time. He yeah. was going to die. Stephen Strange only prolonged his death, I think, if you know what I
yeah.
mean.
That's yeah. great when you go back to Infinity War as well and you see him specifically apologise to Tony because he knows that he's going to die.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I think that's really brilliant for little storytelling when you go back and you realise, oh, he's yeah, not only just apologising for the snap, it's for his death. Yeah.
So
yeah.
very quickly, do we recommend this film, starting with Lizzie?
Yes, but if you're into representation and things like that, you're going to have your issues. But overall, it is good. It does have some really solid conclusions. I did love what they did with Tony Stark, even if it devastated me. And yeah, you should definitely watch it.
Francis?
Yeah, of course. I think it's worth watching. And I think even if you haven't followed the MCU, I went to see it with my girlfriend, and she wasn't really fully up to date with stuff. She vaguely knew the characters, but she still enjoyed it. And I think that says a lot for not just the plot, but for every element of that yeah. film. So yeah, why not go see it?
Jeremy?
Yeah, 100%. If you have seen, you know, the majority of the main beats of the MCU, then you will I'm pretty sure everyone that I'm saying this will have seen already, and you will know how much like the main beats of it will feel. But if you haven't, like Francis said, like, it's still worth seeing, because you do see, actually, there's a huge amount of character growth just within one film,
yeah.
which I think is, even if you're just like a regular moviegoer, you love going to watch the characters and see what happens. And also, it's got an epic like battle at the end, so why not, even if you just want to go and see that, go and see it for that.
I agree with everything you all have said about it, and I'd just like to point out again, like, the double bill of Infinity War and Endgame just works so well as a yeah. standalone epic.